Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the number one ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, that's now a half a club longer in TP5X, you'll be playing a golf ball that performs like it was built just for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks, you can personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Head to TaylorMadeGolf.com today to find the number one ball for you.
But guys, I gotta look handsome again, so I better go with the black tux, because the black tux is the way it's gonna go down for me during ball season, during wedding season, because it's spring season. Weddings are gonna be coming, because if you get married in the fall during like a Saturday or Sunday on football day, you're an asshole. You need to get all of your weddings done before the end of spring. Nobody wants to spend a summer wedding where it's gonna be ultimately hot. If you're going to do a wedding, you got to do it in the spring. And if you're going to go to a spring wedding, you got to be looking good and a tux that fits you right, so you're not sweating your absolute balls off. But you might have originally gotten like your spring tux fit during sweater season, during the winter time. And that's the good thing about the black tux, is because the black tux lets you create your look from hundreds of different styles and different types of stylists and outfits that usually retail for $1,200. But they start here, just $95. The best part about it, though, is that they have a try-on program that you can see the fit and feel the quality of your suit months before the event. And ordering it's going to arrive 14 days before the event. And if anything is less than perfect, the Black Tux will send you a free replacement right away. When the event's over, you just drop it back in the mail. Shipping is free both ways. You don't have to worry about any of that shit. Get it months in advance, 14 days before you get it, so you have plenty of time to make alterations if you're skinnier or fatter, whatever, because everybody knows I'm trying to get skinnier because I look like shit a couple weeks ago. To get this purchase and $20 off, you visit theblacktux.com/chaps. That's theblacktux.com/chaps for $20 off your purchase. That's the only way to get a premium rental suit and tuxedos delivered, and you can ship it, not going to the tux shop, because tux shop people are usually pretty big fucking weirdos, man. Like, they just are.
Yeah, if you're working at like a men's warehouse, forget it.
They're just really strange, and it feels uncomfortable. You want to just get in and get out as quick as possible. You might as well just get it done over the internet. If you do anything basically and not use the internet, you're an idiot, except for going to school after you get out of the military. If you're getting out of the military and you need a new job, Todd and I have always been big proponents of doing good things after you get out. And part of that is being educated. Part of that is going to school. But college isn't for everybody, but getting educated is. You can do that with our pals at Sam Tech. Last month, I told you all about their school. It's a school of automotive machinists and technology, and how Sam Tech can help you transform from the military to civilian life. Sam Tech offers programs in engine block machining, cinder head machining, CNC machining, all different kinds of machinings, and even an associate's of applied science degree. There are classes starting almost every month. Sam Tech is fully accredited and accepts the GI Bill. Financial aid is available for those that qualify. After graduation, Sam Tech grads have a job placement rate of 90%. Pretty fucking good. We know Sam Tech grads' careers on race teams, but they also get starting as machinists in other fields like medical, oil and gas, and aerospace. Shout out to President Trump, who won a Space Force. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Companies all over the world are hiring Sam Tech grad companies like General Motors, Hendrick Motorsports, Joe Gibbs Racing, Toyota Motorsports, John Force Racing, and Boeing, just to name a few. If you want more than a job at a dealership and want to start your career as a machinist, visit samtech.edu/ZBT for more information, or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at samtech.edu. That's samtech.edu/ZBT to sign up today. Great guys, great company, family-run school, and they're going to help you out, use your GI Bill where you don't get absolutely fucked. Let's start the show.
Well, you said my name first this time.
I did. See? Switching it up.
Saying this kid's name first. He's got a smirk on his face like he just got a lap dance at Scores. Unbelievable.
Yeah, let's start with you, Brent. How was your week?
My weekend was actually pretty good. I actually did go to a strip club this weekend. It was name redacted. I'm not going to give any free ads.
Didn't you go snowboarding too?
Oh wait, I went to the strip club 2 weekends ago. I went snowboarding last weekend. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, all the weekends just blend together.
Yeah. We fuck around and call you PFC Bren, but that's like really PFC
Bren. Yo, to a T. To a T. PFC Bren is stationed at Fort Carson right now, went snowboarding this weekend, strip club 2 weeks ago, blew his entire paycheck already.
Yeah. You should see the boxes of shoes I have in my room. They're almost touching the ceiling.
Yo, he's got first the sneakers.
First big boy job, getting new shoes. Yeah. Getting
oh, my
new
God.
Clothes.
Yo, he's texting his buddies.
I will say, though, I have been doing a good job of putting my money away. I've been putting away half of my paychecks for like the last month, and I've actually saving up too. So the money that I'm not saving up, I'm spending on dumb shit, which is pretty much what you guys told me to do.
Yeah.
You said get it out of my system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's taking a little bit longer to get out of my system than I had anticipated. But
well, Christ, I'm sorry. What are you, 23?
24.
Yeah, you got some time to worry about being
this
an
is
adult.
This is your first big boy job, yes. Like a big boy paycheck, like where you're not school and doing
for
all
sure.
That other
yeah.
That's a normal move, man. Right. Like you got even when I got hired at Barstool, my paycheck went up like a lot. Like you do that. That's a thing that you do. Like when you get paid more, you're like, fuck, these toys that I've had my eye on for a while, I'm going to do it. Yeah. I was 30 fucking five. And one of the first things I did when I started working at Barstool was get subwoofers in my truck. Because I just didn't have a truck. I felt like that was a good move. Do I regret it now? Is it kind of embarrassing when I pick up my daughter from middle school? Absolutely not, because I still put on 50 Cent, go with patiently waiting, and she's culturally embarrassed. So it makes my young old guy move a cool move, because now I'm cool dad who's embarrassing this
right
kid.
Lance Corporal Chaps would be proud of you too, so it's important. Yeah. It's important to do that.
BFC Chaps whenever I first got out of boot camp. So for people that don't know, when you're in boot camp, you get paid, but you don't see any of the money. You can't spend it because you're there for 13 weeks. Then you get off for like 10 days to go see your family. You go back to like combat training for another month and a half or so. I forget how long it is. So by the time you're done with that, you have basically 3 months of paychecks that you really haven't had the opportunity to spend. So where did young PFC Chaps go? Because I never had more than at that time in my life, I never had more than like $200 to my name.
Yep.
And then I had like $3,000, and I was like, fuck, man, there's no way I'll have spent all this. This is fucking crazy. So I go to like Hollister and get like all kinds of Hollister
clothes. Oh, man.
I had like shoes from Foot Locker, man. I was getting all kinds of shoes. Oddly enough, no, it wasn't. I tried to find like, I got like a really good Walkman still. Like it was like a Discman Walkman. Because at this point, I was so long ago, iPod wasn't even a thing yet.
Right.
I got to Japan. I'd been in Japan for like maybe a year and iPod came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so stoked about iPod being a thing. I had no clue of what gigabytes was, what megabytes was, what terabytes was, anything. No frame of reference at all. My buddy, Terry, he did. And he was like my corporal at the time. And he had the first iPod that I'd ever seen. I was like, so how much can that thing hold? Because he was just going through song after song after song. You remember when you first got an iPod?
Yes.
It was like,
it was mind-blowing.
How
yeah.
much music it could
yeah,
hold.
Yeah, because I used to like, for travel in college, when we'd go, you know, away games, I would burn CDs. I'd burn a new CD each week. And that's what, I don't know, 12 songs maybe? And you just listen to
that. Well, you could
fit
like 20, but you thought it was like awesome. Like having 20 songs you burned from your computer that you downloaded from like Napster was awesome. So when iPod first came out, I was like, Terry, dude, how many fucking songs can this thing hold? And he was like, I don't know, probably like 10,000. And it was really like the science mind-blown gift where it was just like.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Like
the John C. Reilly one?
It was like 10,000. I was like, how many gigs is it? And I think when the first one came out, it was like 20 gigs when the first one came out. And I was like, well, what is 20 gigs? And I said, it seems like a lot. He's like, yeah, it is. And I was like, well, like. I know how big a Bible is. How many Bibles could you fit? That I and he was like, as like a text document, I was like, yeah, just like Bible. We're going to throw like a Bible on there. How many could it fit? He was like, I don't know, dude, like a billion.
Billion Bibles. A billion Bibles.
A billion fucking
man,
Bibles.
Man, I am going to be spreading the good word till the cows come home.
I was like, my goodness,
my
man.
Word.
A billion Bibles. This is unbelievable.
So PFC Chaps ran right out and got an iPod.
Yeah.
You get and a one terabyte iPod after that.
I mean, I didn't know. I actually went out and bought, I think I might have waited and got the Microsoft Zoom was my first MP3 player that I had. The Microsoft Zoom, very underrated, by the way. It was much prettier than the iPad.
Right.
Or iPod when it.
But anyway,
now I was talking technology.
Yeah. But anyway,
speaking
Brent,
of technology,
I was
go
just going to say one last thing. Brent, I think one thing you're doing that probably the vast majority of 24-year-olds are not doing is putting half of your paycheck away. So you are ahead of the game. So whatever it is you choose to spend your money on, be that entertainment, sneakers, what have you, I think you're okay. You're in good shape.
Yeah. And a lot of that's because he's like his living situation. He's doing smart, like saving up before he moves out into the city because that shit's expensive.
It is.
Everything up there is expensive. What also is going to be expensive is President Trump's new adventure into the Space Force. I'm very excited about the possibility of standing up a Space Force and defending America.
Would you re-enlist?
Oh, yeah.
If there was a Space Force.
If there was a Space Force, I would be all about it.
Yeah. Buzz Lightyear about shit himself when he heard about this. He's excited.
Uncle Chaps to Star Command. Do you read?
I think that's the thing about being president is that you can't just have – if somebody else says that, you're just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's the president standing on Marine Corps Air Base Station saying that we should think about getting a combination of the Army and the Air Force together.
I loved how he said – he was just so nonchalant, so matter-of-fact, like, oh, yeah, we mentioned that the other day. But I'll tell you what. It's a great idea. Maybe we should do that. Wow. Okay. Maybe we should.
That part was funny, and a part that's gone overlooked there was that he was standing on a Marine Corps base and saying, we're going to get you guys more ships. Well, more ships would be one ship. Like, we don't have ships. They belong to the Navy. Like, we go on them from time to time, but they're not our ships.
Well, that should be a pretty low bar then. If he just gets you guys one ship, that's a huge success.
Yeah, like, that's an easy campaign promise. Is to get, we're going to get the Marine Corps more ships. Just
we're
give them one.
Ships.
Just be like, Navy, give them one. And but oddly, it would be really clean, but it would never work.
Yeah.
Like, we just clean it all the time.
But if you are following us on Instagram, at ZeroBlog30, you'll see that we already basically do have a Space Force, the Space Command. It's a part of the Air Force that does manage what's going on in outer space. Not super far.
I mean, that's kind of tricky because they have, like, it has a tricky kind of name where you would never guess that it was part of Space, like, Command.
I agree.
Space Command.
Yeah. No, I agree. a separate Space Force in and of itself sounds cool, so I'm all for it. So we can sign ourselves up for that.
Man, it's been an interesting week. Secretary of State gets fired. We have the moving up from CIA director to Secretary of State, like, elect or appointed. Mm. It's just been a fucking wild week. And it's almost impossible to keep up with the political happenings. Just, I think it might have been Wednesday or Tuesday that there was like 15 things that happened on Wednesday or Tuesday that normally would be national news. Like, it would control an entire news cycle. Now it doesn't even control 90 minutes.
No.
Like, if there's like a scandal of some sort, it doesn't even control 90 minutes. To that point, the VA director is using all kinds of money to go on like personal vacations, like fund all of his personal trips, going out on these lavish tours while he's in Europe, and no one even talks about that. In years past, it's a huge news. Like, they are about to remove another secretary from the cabinet. Right now, as it sits, there has been, five different cabinet members, high-level cabinet members, have been removed from the office since President Trump has taken over. Since the previous high over 2 years was 8 with President Clinton, and in 14 months, Trump is at 5. Not great.
I was going to say, in recent history, you just said he had to go all the way back to Clinton. I couldn't remember any time a cabinet member was ousted. And especially for as long as he's been in office and for the amount of time these people are taking these positions, it's pretty wild that he just thinks it's great to have this sort of turnover.
I think it's so funny that he goes back on like what he says. Like, he's like, I'm finally getting the cabinet that I want. Motherfucker, you picked it. Like, you picked the cabinet. You didn't take over Obama's cabinet. Like, you picked these people.
Yeah.
14 months for a Secretary of State is shockingly bad.
What do you think about
He might go down as one of the worst Secretary of State of all.
Well, yeah, I think that goes without saying. He just did not really do his job up to standard. What do you think about Pompeo?
I think that he's smart, obviously. I think he's a super smart guy, top of his class at West Point. He's a Harvard grad as well. He's a quick riser throughout the ranks. I just feel like he's another type of war hawkish guy. Like, he's having Mattis, having Kelly, I think having all of that military experience in those positions, there's a reason why historically you have a separation of military and civilians at those high levels. Mm-hmm. I think it's dangerous. I think going at North Korea and trying to get these nuclear talks going the same time that you're also going to readdress the Iran situation, why would North Korea feel confident that you're going to stick to what you're saying negotiating-wise if you're going back on your word of what you did with the Iran negotiation?
Well, and not even that, just the lack of continuity within the position. You know, you were brokering these deals with one gentleman, and then a week later, 2 weeks later, he's out on the curb, you know, with a sign looking for work. And now you got a new guy, and who knows what his temperament is or what his agenda is. Obviously, you know, Trump is going to try to steer them in the direction that he wants to go. But obviously, I think Pompeo is probably very different than Tillerson. So who knows the direction that things will take now?
Yeah, and I think that I don't have a problem with President Trump firing Tillerson, mm-hmm. like, at all. One, because he didn't even have, like, the undersecretaries that he needed, like, in the position. He was downscaling the Secretary of State's office. Like, Tillerson was making these decisions to do all of this stuff. And I really believe that you have to have lockstep across the executive branch. And if Tillerson doesn't see eye to eye with President Trump, President Trump's well within his right, especially as a Secretary of State who's the right-hand person of the president and wants to make that on the international stage. If they don't see eye to eye, you got to go. Like,
I agree.
He's got to speak for the president internationally. And if Tillerson wasn't doing that to President Trump's liking, President Trump was in the right completely to fire him.
And I think Tillerson was going the opposite direction, and that's primarily why Trump got rid of him. I think it's okay behind closed doors to maybe disagree slightly and maybe offer a different vantage point, but 100% the perception needs to be that we're all thinking the same thing and we're all reaching for the same objective. So I agree with you that if he's going rogue and they have differing opinions that they're voicing publicly, that's just not a good look for us internationally.
No, it's not. And like you said, it's about continuity. I mean, even when you take it and look at free agents that are happening right now, mm-hmm. there's certain ways that you negotiate. And a point of contention, if you're an NFL free agent, if you're going to get $30 million guaranteed no matter where you're going to go, you're not going to pick a team like the Browns, who are most likely going to have head coaching turnover again. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to agree to something like right. that. And you don't want to go within uncertainty if there's no agreeing. But if you want to go see the Browns play this year, you're going to do that on SeatGeek, because they're going to be aftermarket to go see Cleveland Browns for super cheap. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest way to and easiest way to get tickets to every single type of event, whether you're catching up on your favorite musician's tour or shopping for the perfect gift or searching for a last-minute deal to see your favorite team. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. All the Barstool crew will be going down to San Antonio, where I live, to see the Final Four, and we are going to be using SeatGeek to get in those games, and I absolutely can't wait. Actually, Hamilton is coming to San Antonio, too,
Ooh.
And I am definitely going to be hitting up SeatGeek for that, because I looked up it last night. Back row, the very, very back row, the cheapest for any spot in San Antonio in this theater, $500.
That's banana land, especially when you consider that's, you know, we're talking not off-Broadway, we're talking off-Broadway.
Still. I mean, we usually pay a little bit more because there's not too many hit, like, Broadway shows that come down here.
Right.
But $500 for the cheapest of seats is insane. And my daughter, Kelsey, absolutely loves Hamilton. She mm-hmm. listens to it all the time. Like, on Spotify, what are you listening to? It's either The Waitress with Sarah Barry Ellis, or however the fuck you say her name, mm-hmm. and Hamilton. She listens to it all the time. She has, like, her mind set on it. I'm like, maybe SeatGeek can come through and send your boy promo code Podfathers to that shit. If not, I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and get it on SeatGeek, and they are going to save me time and money because I won't have to go to multiple ticket sites to compare prices, and I'll get the most bang for my buck because SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately find the best seats that fit your budgets. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you're not going to get scammed. All of our listeners get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code CHAPS today. That's promo code CHAPS for $10 off your first secret or first purchase. Not a secret is that everybody's really been digging Kate's Corner. We're going to go to Kate's Corner now. Take it away.
We are smack dab in the middle of March right now. And here at Barstool, that can mean only one thing, something we're all super pumped up about every year. Women's History Month. That's right, Women's History Month. Me personally, I celebrate it a couple of different ways. The first thing I do is just for me. It's treating myself. I get on all the dating sites, put the apps on my phone, JDate, Bumble, Christian Mingle, Tinder, Grindr, Sizzler, 69 Squad, Satan's Meetup, Bush Buddies, Fisting Cupid, Pony Play Corral, Wingman Mile High Club, and I just go to town swiping left on all you motherfuckers. And it just feels so good. Even though I'm only a solid 6 in dark bar lighting, and I am so lonely. Oh my god. Anyway, the other way that I celebrate is by learning about awesome women from the past. And here at Zero Block 30, I thought it would be cool to look at two awesome women from the Revolutionary War. First is Molly Pitcher, a.k.a. Mary Hayes, a.k.a. Bad Bitch. As was common at the time, she followed her husband from battle to battle. A lot of wives did that. And she was 22 years old, by all accounts had a filthy mouth, chewed tobacco, and was pregnant. And she's at the Battle of Monmouth with her husband in June of 1778. It was hot AF, and apparently he got heatstroke and passed out. She stepped up and took his place at a cannon on the front lines, and even took an enemy cannonball underneath her petticoat that tore it up a little bit and just kept going, kept fighting for the cause. There were actual eyewitness accounts, and 4 years later, George Washington actually awarded her a pension for her actions. She got $40 pension, which at the time, pretty big deal. You could get a lot of sweet swag at the Zero Blog 30 site on Barstool Sports app if you had that kind of money. Just saying. Second woman, Margaret Corman. She was actually with the same unit that Molly Pitcher's husband was in. And instead of petticoats, she wore an actual uniform, and the guys called her Captain Molly. When her husband was wounded, she took his place on the front line and got captured by the British. Luckily, they released her, and she was sent to West Point, where she performed guard duty, a bunch of other stuff. But she did such a good job that the officers there requested for her to get a state and federal pension, too, which, for the time, pretty big deal. So, the haters will say that women can't cut it in the military, but history proven you're wrong. That's all for Kate's Corner.
I have, in the Bud Light Busters, I picked Marshall, and Marshall plays today, which is on your listening day, will be Friday. So I'm hoping that they do great things, because I kind of want to go to Vegas. I haven't been to Vegas in a long time. I would like to go, but I will be like the old man in Vegas. They will all be down at the pool and shit like that. There's no chance I won't just be watching it from the luxury of the bathtub in whatever hotel, because every single one of the nice hotels in Vegas have incredible bathtubs.
Yeah, absolutely. But you'll be younger than Dave. Everybody's younger than Dave.
Yeah, but Dave is like a young 41. Like, he goes out, he parties, like,
sure,
recreationally. He does a little bit of drugs from time to time. I am not that. Like, I'm 35-year-old dad, but I do have subwoofers.
Yes, you do. I was a little, you know, I was left out of the Bud Light Busters this year, and understandably so, for reasons, you know, that are not unknown to me. But, you know, I will just attribute it to Dave being afraid to go to Vegas potentially with you and I both. I don't know. Actually,
yeah, it would have been a much riskier thing if I was like drinking.
Yeah. But do you remember last year when he said that? He's like flat out like, chaps and cons. I don't know. I don't know what would happen to us in Vegas if both those guys were there.
Yeah, it would be bad. I'll just act like the bodyguard if I go. It would probably be my role.
That'd be fun.
Just be like body guy. But if you want to win some money and you're doing it for March Madness, you might want to do that with MyBookie. If you haven't checked them out, it's the perfect time to get in the action. The March Madness is here. Lay down some serious money with big-time college hoops. March Madness is the best time to bet. And use MyBookie.ag to do it. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and my listeners. That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, you pay, you get paid. And that's without any fucking hassles or any bullshit along the way. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. Join MyBookie.ag today, and they will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. You can even enter a chance to win the $1 million bracket challenge. Use promo code ZERO to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie today. You play, you win, you get paid. That's MyBookie.ag. Interview time. Here's the interview.
Hey, chaps, do you know what the American military's most trusted news source is?
Zero Block 30.
Close, but not quite. It's actually the Duffel Blog.
Yeah, true.
Satire site, and we have the founder with us here today, Paul Zoldra. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
I will admit, no, I need to admit on behalf of Connor, our other co-host that's not here today, I think he got Duffel Blogged at one point. There was an article about Mattis doing something pretty insane. Maybe it was cutting the Marine Corps birthday cake with his hand, like a knife hand, and like older Marines weren't happy with it.
Yeah.
And I think it was Connor who was like, oh my God, dude, like he really did that?
It happens to the best of us, so.
It does. One of my favorites that got people was the GI Bill paying for guys, the prisoners down in Guantanamo.
Yes, that was a big one.
People really believed that, and they
that
were
fucking
like
fucking Obama.
Their, yeah, that's classic Obama for you.
The best one was got Senator Mitch McConnell in a whole heap of trouble because so you're talking about like people getting fooled by it, and one of his constituents in Kentucky like wrote their office and was like, hey, can you look at this, like this GI Bill benefits thing, and then he, probably some dumb intern, but it still said signed by Mitch McConnell, wrote a letter to the Pentagon asking them to check on it, which was subsequently leaked to Wired and provided Duffel Blog writers endless laughter for quite a few months. So
you would think that if it was somebody, you would want McConnell to take it, because if it's an intern, it's even worse because they're a young person and should be able to recognize internet satire more quickly than like you let an old like Mitch McConnell get away with it. I think a little bit more. You're like, ah, Grandpa, you got fooled on the internet again.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like there are, I guess it shouldn't be a surprise, but like there are way too many people that just believe everything they read.
Yeah,
if you read
the comments section of any article, there's always at least one, and there's always been a million people underneath and go, it's satire, bro, don't you know? Like, so yeah. But that's always fun to read. But Paul, now you're still doing Duffel Blog, but you're at Task and Purpose now too. What are you doing there?
Yeah, I just started Task and Purpose. I'm a columnist. I have my own. So I started a like side website called Code Red News, which was basically like me writing just my own opinions, analysis and such of military stuff, but serious, not satirical nature. And, I was talking with like Zach Iskel, who is the head honcho over at Higher Purpose / Task and Purpose, and we've talked over the years quite a few times. Like he really wanted me to be at Task and Purpose a bunch of times, and then finally it was like, hey, you want to just move your site over? And like, you know, we kind of worked out the details, and it just kind of worked. Like I thought it made a lot of sense. It was instead of me building out a brand new column and a new website and trying to figure out like all the SEO trickery and social media crap, like there's like a built-in audience at Task and Purpose. And so, you know, I figured it was good. So yeah, I've been writing there for, since March 1st and, already enjoying the comments section. I've already gotten about 4 or 5 pieces of hate email.
There we go.
I'm doing pretty well for myself. It's pretty good. You know, you always know you're doing well when you get angry all caps emails. That's a good metric.
But you probably get less there than you would at like Duffel Blog when people take your work seriously. They don't realize it's satire and they're like, this is unbelievable. That's the best part of Duffel Blog to me is the comments on like Facebook is what people who don't realize that it's satire.
You know, I don't know. I don't get a whole lot of hate mail at Duffel Blog.
Really?
I don't know if anybody, all the other writers do or what, but like generally, mostly it's like I get like 3 types of emails. I get people who will send in a article submission. They're like, you know, check out this article, man. Please publish it. And it's usually really bad. And then there's I don't like one-off submissions. I rather have writers who are, you know, writing every once in a while or whatever. You know, that's a better approach. I don't like to just kind of too much of a hassle. And then I get the emails or mostly Facebook messages who are saying, you guys have got to write about this. And it's like some article pitch that's, again, not good. And then the third type of email I get is randomly sometimes you'll get an email from someone who's like, you know, saying like, oh, I had my buddy got him, like he was fooled by it or whatever like that, which are always like really fun to look at. So, but hate mail, I don't often see. I don't know, maybe like the people who really hate us just can't find our email address.
That's for the best.
That's probably it. Like, honestly, that most likely is it. They're just too, like, they got fooled by it. They're too dumb to figure out how to tell you. So they probably just repost it on their Facebook wall and tell their Nana about it.
Well, I think you're right. Like, actually, so a task and purpose, the difference is that, like, Duffelblog, you have to go to the about page and you'll find our email. Which is, I mean, oh my God, that's like one click, but that's way too.
Their anger's already over whenever they have to go to like two clicks.
Well, Task and Purpose has at the bottom, it has my email address right there. Like, if you want to send hate mail to this author, call Task and Purpose, you know? So you
do a lot of work now with getting young veterans into, well, not young veterans, but veterans period into the newsroom. That's like a passion for you. But when you were a young Marine infantry guy, did you envision getting out and going into media like what you did at Duffelblog and what you're doing now at Task and Purpose?
No, not really. Yeah. I mean, I was a grunt. I didn't – I don't have a whole, like, a lot of writing background and stuff. A lot of people are always thinking that – or there's some people think that I was, like a public affairs person or something for a lot of times, like – because they generally tend to be better writers and, you know, they go on to journalism or PR or something like that. But I was just a dumb grunt, you know, walking around in Afghanistan, like, you know, minding my own business. And this whole getting into writing, getting into media, all that kind of stuff was kind of, it was all by chance. It was all really kind of, you know, it was kind of accidental, really. So I started Duffelblog while I was in college. The writing at the beginning, I can look back now and say that it's very atrocious and terrible.
Everyone starts somewhere. It's usually not good.
It's amazing how much if you practice that, you get a little bit better.
Yeah.
Except for me, but whatever.
Yeah.
You're pretty squared away, dude, like as far as media goes, but I don't want like our listeners sucking your dick too much, so we're going to bring it back to a little bit. Tell us about the time that you got fired at a gas station when you were 18 years old.
That's in my bio. I think it's kind of funny, but it is actually true. So my last job before I went in the Marine Corps was at a convenience store / gas station in my hometown. So I was like the clerk, you know, fetching people cigarettes and turning on the gas pumps. That's a wonderful profession. And anyway, there was I was going to the Marine Corps, I don't know, maybe in like a month or so or whatever it was. And, but when you're at a convenience store or at a gas station late, you're usually the only person there. So I used to like close up, you know, early some nights. If it's slow, I'd close up like 15 minutes early or something like that. No big deal. The owner wouldn't care. But, this one night, I think it was like I had a couple of my friends came to the store and they were like, "Hey, dude, like, let's go drink, let's go party." And I'm like, "Huh, well, I'm here, I can't." And they're like, "Come on, dude, let's go." And I ended up closing it like 2 hours.
Oh my god!
Like detail.
2 hours early, I'm like closing this shit up, and then I guess like you know. Joe Blow trying to get cigarettes one night was really pissed off and like the owner found out and I got fired the next day for it. He's like, "Man, I'm sorry. I can't really keep you on for this one." And I'm like, "All
see,
right."
I used to do that shit in the Marine Corps because I was a dog handler and spent a lot of time in Okinawa. We had 6 bases that we had to cover. And because we were driving back and forth, we had a lot of like independence as dog handlers.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, "Oh, you're supposed to be on Schwab and Hansen until 04. Well, 02 would roll around. I'd be like, "All right, well, guys, well, I'm going to go down to Kadena." And then I would just go back to the kennels and pull out a cot and, like, go to sleep until, like, the middle of the morning. Nobody really, like, ever knew about it. And I knew for a fact when I was doing it, if I ever get caught, I am super fucked.
Oh, yeah.
But it was so worth it just to be like, I'm going to sleep 2 hours. I'm supposed to be on duty. This is going to be awesome.
Well, this reminds me of pulling duty, like duty NCO. When I first came in the Marine Corps, our duty NCO, I was like a Lance Cooley. So, like, I'd be on A duty. And
so
then,
duty NCO is for our civilian listener. Duty NCO is somebody who gets put at a desk basically in the middle of the barracks, and you're basically on baby watch. Like, you watch the Marines like they're babies. If anybody gets drunk, if they're going to go outside, like outside of the barracks wearing inappropriate civilian attire, anything like that, it's your responsibility as a duty NCO to correct that. So go ahead.
Yeah, and actually just one caveat to that. I think the vast majority of the time is basically you're babysitting a phone. So that's all.
Yeah.
Do you still remember how to answer the phone?
Oh, of course I do. Yes. Let me think here. good evening. Good evening, 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marines, Weapons Company, Sergeant Soldier speaking. How may I help you, sir or ma'am?
There you go. That's sir or ma'am. Love it.
You know, Chaps actually has a green logbook.
I do.
He has it. Chaps logs.
I log things. If people are fucking up, I put it in the logbook.
There's got to be a duffel blog article here, but I just can't think of it. But like, There are people that like really go over the top with their greeting on the duty line. Like, they're like, Sergeant Soldier speaking, how may I help you, sir, ma'am? The weather report is 81 degrees with winds out of the northwest. The commanding officer is Colonel so and so. Like, there's all kinds
of. It's a motivated Monday here at camp.
You got to give her a razzle dazzle, you know?
Semper Fidelis, Sergeant Soldier. Yeah, so duty NCO, when I started, it was a sleeping post where, you know, like
the
A duty
kind.
Is duty is sleeping, you know, and vice versa. And then I don't know why, I guess because my battalion commander is a dick. That's probably the reason. But
usually,
he decided to change it to doing it in Charlie's, which is a, you know,
God,
that sucks. And then
that's a short sleeve dress uniform. So you have to wear wool pants. Your pants are made of wool. Then you have this very uncomfortable shirt. Like, think of the most uncomfortable shirt that, like, a doctor in 1950 would wear. It's made out of that material.
And super starched.
And it has to be pristine and perfect. Your creases have to be exactly right. And you're sitting down in a chair for usually 12 hours a day wearing this uniform with shirt stays, which are things that attach to the bottom of your shirt, go down to your socks, and keep your nuts basically complete. Not, I mean, not for Kate, but it keeps your usually keeps your not trying to assume, but keeps your nuts like completely uncomfortable. Going to the bathroom, even to take a piss, is a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, it was that uniform, and then a 24-hour post. Neither of you can sleep, which was just ridiculous. But I remember skating out of this. How I would pull it off is just like we basically do the same thing. We would, like, whoever my A duty was, I'm like, all right, I'm going to my room to take a piss, wink wink, you know, and then like basically be completely in uniform, not take a damn thing off, and just like basically sleep like that, like on my back.
And you sleep like a dead person because somehow subconsciously you know not to move to completely fuck up your uniform.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, like, you know, like you set your alarm or whatever. And then if there's anything happening or any issue, like he should be texting you or something to like warn you.
Yeah.
But yeah. The Marine Corps was a lot of fun.
Skating.
Yeah, it was very fun.
All about skating.
So when
I highly recommend it.
When I was a young Marine, let's transition to a little more serious topic. When I was a young Marine, there was constantly these montages of videos that would come out of deployments. Like, Marines were probably the first ones to really edit their own shit.
What was the music they always edited?
Like, Let the Bodies Hit the Floor.
That's the one.
A lot of Three Doors Down would be playing.
There was Seether. Seether was a big one.
Seether was a big one. You would.
I remember one video in particular, which I must have watched like 100 times. It was from 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines in Fallujah, and their like public affairs shop made this video, and it was like Battle of Fallujah. It's basically like, I mean, the Battle of Fallujah in reality was a fucking terrible, terrible battle, like horrible fight. I don't know, I can't remember how many Marines were lost, but there were quite a few. Like, it was it was the most Marines we lost in a single battle since I
think. Yeah, there's a reason why it's added to the birthday message now, that along with Marja.
Yeah, like it was a very rough fight, you know, like it was house to house, room clearing, all this other stuff. But this video made the Battle of Fallujah look like it was fucking awesome to be there. Like it was is the coolest shit ever. Like it's just Marines knocking in doors, doing room clearing, and like
lots of night vision goggle videos.
Yeah. And it's like, man, that's I don't know if that's really accurate.
But that being said, there was always this element, and you know, and it was really kind of an unstated rule. You never put injured Marines in your video. No injured Americans go in the videos. It's completely fine. It was completely fine to share amongst yourself a dead Iraqi, a dead person that was from a different country, but you never put in your own videos. And as Marines now, like looking back, there was a video that came out. There was a couple of different veteran websites, different Instagram accounts that put out the entire video of what happened in Niger, where the Marines or the soldiers were basically ambushed and they were killed, and they showed them being injured. And that sparked a lot of debate in the veteran community. So I kind of want to just like suss that out amongst us three and kind of feel your thoughts. Kate, we'll start with you. Whenever you saw that, what was your like guttural reaction?
Yeah, well, it was a website called SOFREP. SOFREP, am I saying that right? SOFREP. And I had seen people on Twitter that were really upset that this video was posted. And it was from last year, an event that took place last year in Niger. And it's the actual helmet cam footage of these guys getting ambushed and killed. And so I clicked on the video because I wanted to see what all the fuss I was seeing online was about. And I didn't realize it was going to be the full video. And I didn't realize it was going to be unedited. I don't think I realized what I was getting into. I'm sitting in a coffee shop watching these Americans get killed. Yeah. I mean, you see it was extremely graphic and it was really upsetting. I had tears like rolling down my face at the end because it was so. But at the same time, their defense was, because so many people were so angry about it, they say Americans are always clamoring for the facts. Look at Benghazi. Look at this. Look at that. They want to know the facts, but nobody wants to see this. Nobody wants to see the reality of war and the reality of the sacrifices being made. Here it is. Take a good hard look at it. It's not us trying to be disrespectful or show war porn or get follows. This is a hard look at reality. Look at, you know, you want to be invested in our foreign policy? This is it right here. So I don't know, but other people are just saying it's so insanely disrespectful to show that. You know, imagine the family coming across that or, you know. So I wasn't quite sure what to think. And I actually posted in our Duffel Blog writers group, like, I'm like, someone tell me what to think here. Like, am I a bad person for even watching that video?
Paul, what do you think? Yeah.
I read so SOFREP, there's like a two parts to the story. First off, SOFREP posted the video at its website, and it was released by ISIS. So ISIS threw on that dumb freaking Arabic, you know, music on the shit, and
they added screams to it.
They added screaming and all, you know, they're being douchebags like they are usually.
It's a propaganda video, yeah.
And so, however, the video was helmet cam, so it is made by a U.S. soldier. I forgot which one of that team, but. Anyway, SOFREP took out the music and then took out like all the audio was gone from it and removed the ISIS stuff. So it's like it's not really an ISIS propaganda video anymore. It's just this helmet cam footage from this soldier on their website. And they wrote about it. And anyway, they were basically like it looked like it was sort of split in the comments of their posts, like. A whole bunch of people were like, this is disrespectful. How could you do this? And then a whole bunch of other people were like, you know, amazed that these guys, you know, fought to the end like that. And they were super brave. I mean, I saw this. I watched the video, too. I think I was less like Katie in that, like, I knew it was the full video. But I don't – it's just my curiosity gets the best of me. Like I have to watch this stuff. Like if there's some I mean, I don't know. And maybe it's just me. Like, I've written so much about military stuff and all this foreign policy stuff. And I'm almost like immune to it. To like, I've seen so many ISIS hostage videos that I've watched, and I'm like, I should not have to watch them, and I shouldn't be watching them. But it's like, it's part of my job a lot of times to be writing about what these are and what they're doing, you know?
Right.
And so like, I'm like, okay, let's see it, you know, and I got to watch this thing. And it's like, it's hard. Like, it's really terrible to watch. So part of me thinks like, yeah, people should watch it. People should see what these soldiers did, and how they fought back bravely against, you know, a very much larger force than them. But SOFRA followed it up, because there were, you know, there was a controversy about it, and they had an editor's note about it and saying basically, hey, we're a media organization. And, you know, you guys are saying like, we get money off this, and this is the blatant thing for clicks. And he explained, which I agree with, which is like, they don't get money for that. Like,
right.
They don't make money off of a propaganda video from ISIS. Advertisers don't want to put their shit next to that video.
Yeah, but so there's a little bit of that's disingenuous a little bit, because you do, if somebody goes to the website, if it's embedded in the website, there is Google AdSense that they're going to get some money. Sure, they don't get the same amount of money as they would for an original video, but to say that they don't get any money from that when it created a firestorm of clicks is a little disingenuous.
Sure. Yeah, I totally agree. I think, though, it's really, it kind of is on their end a. It's really a tough choice, because they're going to get this short-term AdSense gain, but they might lose like a whole shit ton of their people that are fans of the site.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of a judgment call, and their judgment call came down to like, we are journalists and we're a journalistic organization. We remove the propaganda element, and this is something that, you know, people may want to see, and you know,
and
I don't know.
Here's my thoughts. How I feel about it is that I think that anytime you can humanize the American soldier, the American veteran, it's a great thing to do. I think that seeing it is shocking, and it should be. I think the American public shouldn't have butterflies and rainbows over what's going on in war and think that, oh, they died silently and quickly. If it was a horrific death, I think people need to see that, because when you have people like Lindsey Graham out there that are beating the war drums that we should go back to war with North Korea, it's videos like that that should be ingrained in the American public's conscious, where we say, absolutely not, because this is the type of thing that can happen. 30 million people in South Korea could be dead in an instant if we go into North Korea. Right. So whenever we have that, but it's also a slippery slope, because the American veteran has no problem. I'm going to describe a video, and I guarantee you each one of you have seen it 1,000 times. A tank rolls down the street. A guy with an RPG is laying in the middle of the street. A sniper shoots him in the head, and his head collapses against.
Yes.
We have absolutely no problem sharing the enemy's deaths, but when it's ours, it's a little bit more conscious. I think there needs to be a return to humanity, where we understand on both sides of the conflict, these are real people, real deaths are going on. Sure, we don't give a fuck about ISIS. Kill them all. But there is a certain amount of humanity that needs to be realized when you're going to war. Shit is ugly, and it looks ugly, and it looks ugly online. And it's different even between seeing it from World War II to now, because that's not high definition. It's black and white. Even when it's colorized, it looks like a regular movie. We see it now. It's high definition. It's from a GoPro, and we know that's a real person. That's a real injury. That's a real American death.
Yeah.
I think I just heard, like, I don't know, half of America's veterans going, what the fuck, man? Are you comparing ISIS to American soldiers? Like, I feel like that's the retort. Like,
right, and it is the retort. Like, and I think that it's like that's.
Like, you know, the enemy's fucking videos, like, fuck those guys, whatever. That's not the same as these Americans. And I think it's like, on a level, I agree with you. It is kind of strange. Like, hey, I love watching ISIS get waxed as much as the next guy, but I do think it's very disingenuous for the Pentagon to come out. A spokesman, like right after that video came out, was like, hey, if the media reports on this or shares it or in any way, you're helping ISIS. You're disseminating propaganda. That's what the spokesman said. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
and then sure, the mother of all bombs get dropped in Afghanistan.
Yeah. No, but Operation Inherent Resolve, like, all they do on their YouTube is, like, nothing but bombs dropped on ISIS. Like, that is propaganda.
They have a Twitter feed that does. I'm always, sometimes I'm like, isn't it crazy that I can tweet at Inherent Resolve? And usually late at night, I'm like, you up? You guys up? What are you up to?
Well, actually, funny you mention that. Did you know the Taliban has their own Twitter account?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of crazy. And I'm not comparing the deaths of American soldiers. Like, I want to get in front of that because you're absolutely right. I'm saying the death, war death, both sides, is a difficult thing to watch. It should be a difficult thing to watch. But obviously, as Americans, we're the American soldier. You can't go in thinking, oh, this is horrific. You have to be, and not brainwashed is not the term, but desensitized certainly is, that we watch those videos. So when we go and we see somebody that's dead in the middle of the street, it doesn't bother you like as much as it probably should.
Yeah.
And now I was talking war vids.
And, like, veterans and how we think aside, at the end of the day, I kind of, you know, I was rolling it around in my head. I think it's important for the American public to see that, because I think they've completely forgotten that we're at war for the most part, it feels like. Yes, they love the troops. They love the troops. But ask anybody what's actually going on, and nobody can tell you. And for them to see, this is the cost. There are still people dying. This is still going on. And those men were wonderful men, you know, they were, I mean, if you watch the video, incredibly brave. These are the type of people we're losing. So maybe, you know, if people watched it with the right perspective, it would give them more of an investment in what we're doing and pay more attention to what we're doing instead of just waving the flags, you know?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think, a lot of the apathy that comes from, like the post 9/11 wars, that it kind of goes back to transparency. Like, take for instance Syria, like our campaign in Syria, you know, against ISIS, which is now turning into a big clusterfuck with the Kurds in Turkey. Surprise, surprise. But all during this time, it was like, hey, there's no boots on the ground. No Americans are there. Don't you worry. Like, everything's going to be A-okay. And there was nothing to refute that other than, you know, a couple of brave, you know, a handful of brave journalists here or there. There was no embeds anymore. There's no, like, transparency on troop numbers. There's no, like, videos of, like, troops actually there and operating in the country, because the Pentagon doesn't want that, because they know, like, people are, like a lot of people aren't really like on board for the forever war and like just continuing it. And so, you know, might as well like make it a lot harder to find out information and stuff like that. So it's like, you know, the Niger video is a perfect example. Like, I mean, when that happened, my first reaction was like, what the fuck are we? We're in Niger? What the fuck are we doing at night?
Right. Most people didn't even know we were there.
Yeah. That's crazy. Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it.
Sorry to end like such a.
You guys just want to sing? You want to sing anything?
Something
upbeat.
Paul,
just take us out of your interview with the Marine Corps hymn, all three verses.
Yeah, no, I think we need to leave on a positive note. And so I will sing Happy Birthday. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Everybody check out Paul's shit on both Duffo Blog and the Code Red. And, yeah, there we go. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
CodeRedNews.com.
What is it? Say it again.
CodeRedNews.com.
There we go. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Pretty consistent that if you are a funny person, like if you have consistently funny takes on, especially on current event policies, you're pretty smart and you're pretty well-read because you have to be in order to do that. That's why Robin Williams, I don't know if you remember the story, but Robin Williams said that he would start every single day reading the six biggest newspapers in the country, because in order to be a comedian, he had to know what was going on in the world. In order to make topical jokes, you have to know what's going on. Paul is an example of that. Being able to satirize the military in a way that he does and his staff does on Duffel Blog means that he's really well read. And he had some great thoughts on Niger. And I think that getting into that with him was pretty important thing to talk about, because we have kind of like skipped over a little bit because, like we said at the beginning of the show, there's so many scandals that it's hard to keep track of what's going on.
And it's not even necessarily topical by the time we start recording. You know, it just moves so fast that we can't keep up. We can't do a podcast every day.
Right. And I think that's the issue with what's going on now. When we had, it was even hard when we tried to cover like the election. Mm-hmm. The election was going on. We would be like, well, that was fucking 4 days ago. Like, well, he made fun of somebody that was a prisoner of war. Like, that's like old news. Like, just doesn't happen any other time.
Yeah.
The news cycle is so fast that it's hard for us to really get in on it. I was glad that Paul shared his thoughts. And there's been even more information that come out. Like our friend Dan LaMoth over at the Washington Post, he had an article this week that talked about they found the SUV that was in the video.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of shit happens a lot. And that's not just under the Trump administration. That's been a failed policy for 15 years, like that we've been at war, 17, whatever the fuck it is now. That's been a failed thing where we lose track of gear and then all of a sudden you see it in propaganda videos, whether it's Mod Deuces that are doing it, like 50 caliber machine gun, whether it's RPGs, whether it's javelins, all kinds of shit get in the hands of the wrong people.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting to see it get turned into propaganda.
And it's so easy to identify it because a lot of our weapons and a lot of our vehicles are strictly only from the United States. So it's, you know, it's no brainer where the stuff
either we made it or we sold it. Like we know.
Right.
And there's really two major arms dealer in the world, us and the Russians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our stuff differs from theirs greatly. So. But yeah, no, Paul.
There's certain stuff about our stuff that's better, like as far as accuracy and long distance goes. Like I would much rather have an M4. But as far as a combat weapon, day to day operations, and can get dirty and still fire, the AK-47 is superior.
Absolutely, you could bury that thing in sand for a week, come back, and it's going to fire blood, no problem.
Ice, and it's going to go off.
Yep. Yeah. But no.
And I can speak from experience. They fucking hurt.
That's true, too, because they carry a larger caliber bullet than
and that's the reason why they carry a larger caliber bullet, because ours – have you ever read why we use the 5.56 instead of the 7.62?
I mean, I would say it would have to do with the size of the NATO rounds.
It's the ricochet effect. So if you get
– or I was just completely off. It shows you how much I know about weapons.
If you get hit in the body cavity with a 5.56 round, the odds are that it's going to bounce around in your body. And
yes, that's true.
You get the a 7.62, like I've experienced before, usually just goes straight through.
Mm-hmm.
So it hurts like a motherfucker, but it's not as really deadly. I mean, if it gets in, if a 5.56 round gets inside you, it's going to cut up a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to do it. So that's the reason why we go with the 5.56.
There you go. The more you know.
Yeah, the more you know.
But yeah, thanks
any
to Paul.
Any safe rounds alibis?
Yeah, just thanks to Paul. You know, I only discovered Duffel Blog, I don't know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, and it was the greatest thing ever. And I really have a great appreciation for it, and he was so gracious to give us his time. And then the last thing I have is just a shout to a stoolie in the Army, Vic, who was blown up by an IED a couple months ago. He's recovering right now, but he's a stoolie, he's a ZBT fan, and we're just wishing him a speedy recovery.
Oh, yeah. Bren?
Final four picks?
Ooh.
Who you got?
I don't have any.
No?
You got...
I haven't even filled out a bracket.
I filled out one hastily, but do you have a prediction for a winner, even? Maybe not in the final four, but a winner?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't. Because I haven't watched, like, a single bit of basketball. I'm excited to get into it this year. Like now,
mm-hmm.
I'm going all in on Marshall. Like I read a little bit. I did read the Action Network. Mm-hmm. I think it's what it's called. I read a lot of that stuff this morning, so I'm kind of pumped. I did watch a little bit of basketball. I watched the kid from Oklahoma play earlier in the year when he was lighting it up. But Dave said they lost like 11 of 12 and still got in the tournament somehow. Mm-hmm. Like you figured they got – if you're on the bubble losing 11 of 12, probably not the best team to let in.
Probably not the best. I'm going to go Villanova for the win. What about you, Brent?
I'm taking Duke.
Strong choice.
Yeah, I fucking hate Duke. I hope it's not Duke. I would like to see a team that doesn't win a lot. I think Virginia would be cool, even though they play a really boring style of basketball. But I'm just here for the buzzer beaters, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this is
love
the
sport. Buzzer beaters.
That's what it's all about. I always root for the smaller school. I want it to be a small school taking out a big dog. As long as that happens a couple times, I'm happy.
Did you see what Dave did with that kid from Montana? Did you see that storyline?
So
one of Montana's starters tweeted at Dave, and because Montana's playing Michigan, I think Well, they would have played by the time this episode. I think they play at 9 o'clock Thursday night. So the kid from Montana tweets at Dave, and he's like, "Hey, Dave, hope I get to take a picture with you when you're down here in Wichita for the Michigan-Montana game." And Dave condescendingly tweeted, in first person, "Dave doesn't go to first-round games." And then he felt bad about it, and he followed up with a tweet and said that if they beat Michigan, that he will come to Wichita and take the picture and root Montana on. And now he said he has to bring Frankie with him, which is why I kind of find it extra hilarious because of how close I work with Frankie, that there's a chance that Frankie is going to get dragged on St. Patrick's Day to Wichita just because Dave felt a little bit guilty about the way he treated a Montana basketball player. So I'm going to be watching that Montana-Michigan game like a hawk. It's going to be intense.
Well, then I'm Team Montana. I'm Team Montana, and I'm Team Marshall. All right, sound the retreat.